It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. Gene Bolduc here, your host, and I'm joined, as ever, by my senior politics correspondent, Penny Rich. Penny.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Good whatever.
Really, whatever it is. You know, part of our show is, the first time our show airs is at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays.
Oh, goodness.
And so for those individuals, whoever you are, bless your heart for listening at 4 o'clock in the morning. I know you're getting off work and trying to stay awake on the way home. And maybe sometimes we're not that helpful for that, but we'd like to give you a little giggle or something on the way home. So anyway, if you're listening in, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are, I hope you're dry. Wowie, what a week.
Wow, just crazy.
You know, we're recording on the 18th, and we'll air this coming weekend, and this has been the week that was the week of Hurricane Florence. And I think that, at least at my house, we were bracing for a post-Fran. We have no power.
Sure.
There's multiple trees down across the street. You know, this kind of thing. And we actually, you know, for us anyway, we're not exactly, you know, lumberjack people. But this time we were pretty well prepared, I think, for this storm. You know, we had the water ready. We're going to lose our water if we lose power because of our... we're on a well system, and so we got a generator. We were able to get one before the storm was altogether terribly certain, and we got that. You know, I mean my husband, of course. we got that all set up. You know, we're able to get large gas cans and have enough fuel to run it for a couple of days, and you know, we got the cars fueled up. We had bottled water. We had enough. Certainly had plenty of food in the house. You know, we might be crying about having one more can of canned soup or something else cooked on the grill that doesn't belong in the grill. But you know, having been through that after Fran, and really being nowhere near as well prepared for that as we should have been. I felt like, yeah, this will be okay. You know, we'll play some Monopoly in the daylight and we'll be all right.
Right.
And then, you know, the storm took this turn that was, you know, so crazy when they predicted it. I thought, you know, I'm sorry to say the sorry men, but is there a man driving this storm? Because
it
obviously won't stop and ask for directions.
No.
Keeps making wrong turns.
Yeah.
Stalls out, doesn't know where it's going. And it reminded me of storms probably over the last 20 years. Gloria is one that comes to mind right away, that kind of came near the coast and then just stalled there, just sat there, just bumped inland and then bumped back out. And I mean, these are horrible situations at the coast. I mean, there's just nowhere for the water to go. But it was stunning to me how far inland that problem came, including to our little hamlet here.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I was very lucky not to just get caught being out driving around thinking, well, thank goodness now we're in the clear, because I was out driving around in a couple of days since. And
sure.
I thought, well, you know,
I was
we're talking
yesterday.
About this in the past tense, so what's to worry? But you had a different experience.
I did. Well,
tell
I
me
just,
what happened to
well,
you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just want to say that I think that, like you, most people tried to prepare as best they could.
Yeah.
And they paid attention, which was good. So now everybody has tons of water, and a good portion of us did not lose electricity, power. I did not. So we were good. But I want to make sure that people understand that just because you got lucky this time doesn't mean that you're
going to
get lucky every time.
Yeah, that water's not going anywhere at my house, let me tell you.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, you know, it worked out okay for me. You know, I'm in a new place, and it was fine. It's a little bit higher land, so not too many big trees around. Wasn't really concerned about the big trees coming down.
Right.
You know, parked my car in the part of the lot that I thought was going to be the safest, so that was good. Got through, and I was giving updates to people on Facebook because I have a lot of friends all over the place. Wanted to make sure they knew. And that was a good thing about Facebook, right?
You could check in. Yeah, you're not kidding. That's right.
You could check in. But yesterday I was out, and I was heading to work, and you know, we were talking a little bit about this right before we went on air. Stopped and did my, you know, my thing here, and then I was heading to Durham for a ride that usually takes 20 minutes to get to a client. It took me just a little under 2 hours.
Wow.
And it was truly eye-opening to me what a flash flood means.
Yeah.
Because I was driving along, and then all of a sudden, I was covered in water. And, you know, I had to drive out of the water, even though they said, don't drive through the water, don't drive through the water. You have to drive out of the water
if the water suddenly gets you.
And I'm talking about driving on something that was pretty dry.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was flooded.
Yeah, and you could just see it all around you.
You could see
it. You got to go back the way you came because you got to know that that's probably a drier route.
Right. And, you know, all around town, you can see people just stopping and, like, deciding, all right, how am I going to get around it? As I was saying, Florence didn't want to leave us. She hung around. We kind of felt, okay, we're getting comfortable with this. Maybe she is going to go, you know, and
Just break down on her way out.
Just break down on your way out. No. She had to give us one last goodbye
It is like that bad girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Who not only breaks up with you, but trashes your apartment on the way out.
Right.
You know, like after you left for work.
Right.
And you're going, all right, Kathy, you know, we broke up. And then, you know, and then he goes off to work, and then he comes home, and his place is
wrecked. She takes all your clothes on the way out. It was pretty scary, though.
And, you know, that's probably his fault.
That's right.
Let's just be real about that.
It's always the man's
fault. Yeah, it's always the guy. And, you know, in these situations, you know, the bad girlfriend has probably got a reason.
Yeah. But I did, and unlike other folks, I mean, I did go out for walks every day just to check things out and, you know, just to do a walk. And you know, being a county commissioner, I wasn't really in touch with you know, county, the sheriff, emergency services, pretty regularly, just to see if there's anything else that they needed for the county commissioners to do or if we needed to get extra word out. I think they communicated really well this time. I think the governments did a good job. We'll get some feedback from that as, you know, in the next week or so to see what we could be doing better.
Let me give you a suggestion.
Yeah,
since
please.
You mentioned that, apparently you're an elected official. since you mentioned that, let me just mention this, that I think one of the most invaluable things for all of us all over the state are webcams.
Yeah.
And to the extent that those can be, like, locally powered, you know, either with battery backups or I don't know how all that is done. But to that extent, like, I'm thinking the thing that comes to my mind immediately is near Weaver Street Market, you know, down there. It just occurs to me that if people know that they can check that and they can see it either online or on Facebook and see whether or not it's okay in that area before they leave to go somewhere that they maybe don't have to, I think these are very helpful things. I mean, I was very grateful with some of the coverage that WRAL did right after Carteret County, right after the Barrier Island kind of reopened for residents and for the media to go in, that they just went in there and started at the fort at the end of Atlantic Beach and just drove Salter Path Road all the way down to Emerald Isle. There's a lot of people in the Triangle who care about their property down
there. Absolutely, can't get there.
And they really don't want them to come down there and check on it right now, even though it may hypothetically be technically true that you have a right to get on the island and check on your property. The mayor of Pine Knoll Shores said the other day at a meeting I was in that 70% of the people in that town who own property don't live there. What a sweet deal, by the way, for an elected official, right?
Yeah.
Talk about, you know,
a couple months out of the year is crazy. Yeah, the rest of the time, there's 300 people here.
Well, and you know, your constituency is people who can't vote for you or against you.
So, you know,
talk about low turnout and, you know, you could be talking about a room with 25 people in and that's everybody who voted for you and that's all you need.
Yeah. You need three votes.
To get it right. Well, how do you need extra fries to vote for me? Because that's about what it would take, right? So, but anyway, his point was about people coming and going off the island. And especially that in emergency situations, while people have property and obviously they're concerned about it, it's not the kind of concern that you have for your primary residence. And for the people who do have primary residences there, they're just top priority for obvious reasons.
Sure.
And you have to make way for them to get in. But I thought it was a great service to take some photographic evidence while the storm was starting to move away from the coast and lighten up, that you could kind of see how things were at probably about the worst phase.
Yeah.
And that road, that main road that runs down the island, was pretty clear. They would swerve to the left and to the right here and there, and you could see that there was, you know, flooding in this and damage to this building. But it fared much better than I thought it would. When they're driving along and you see a couple of trailer parks and they're still there perfectly intact, I'm going, really? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Are these not washed out to sea?
Or the different paths it takes. You just wonder how, you know, if some people got really lucky and some people didn't. And, you know, we do need to talk about, folks that are living in lower income housing.
Right.
That will not be able to return to that housing. Like, what are we going to do?
What are they going to do?
How are we going to help them?
Downstate at the coast.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a massive problem.
Yeah.
It's probably also going to be some form of an opportunity for our state to really throw our arms around that problem in a very big way.
It would be nice if we could do that.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, if we choose to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Almost like New Orleans tried to do. I don't know to what extent they've been successful, but they wanted to build back a certain amount of New Orleans, you know, in really green construction and very sustainable and with much tougher standards for what it would withstand, because it's pretty likely it's going to have to endure something bad again in the future.
Well, the same thing here in Chapel Hill. I mean, we're right across the street from where we are, from the radio station. It floods there all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, at what point do you stop cleaning it up and tear it down and build something differently? Because it's not working.
Right.
You know, it's not working.
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna take a quick break and come back and get right into that, because I think I really feel like in the next 10 years, that's the next big thing in politics and a really good central organizing point for progressives, especially on a very local scale and moving up the chain, too.
Sure.
So we're going to be back in just a moment. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we are back with Penny Rich. It seems like we were never away.
We were not.
We're always with Penny Rich. So we were talking about housing. You know, there are several areas in Chapel Hill that I can think of, and I know there are in every community that are low-lying areas that are very vulnerable to these kinds of problems. They do not tend to be the housing that is occupied by the richest part of the community.
That's correct.
And I'm very sure that that's also the case, you know, everywhere between here and the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. So I would find it, I think I told you before we started that I really feel like dealing with this massive infrastructure challenge that we're going to continue to have, there's no reason to believe that we're not going to have two more storms like this in the next 10 years. I don't think that's a daring prediction. We don't need two more. We're not going to be able to recover from this one fully before the next one hits, is my personal projection. I think that the repairs that are going to take—what did they say? I think the estimate of the total damage of the storm for the entire East Coast is going to be something like $17 billion, with a B. It feels a lot like a lot of those billions are going to be North Carolina billions, and I don't know how many of these losses were insured. I can tell you that I wouldn't want to be trying to buy flood insurance in the next 10 years for the almost anywhere in the East Coast, but especially in the Southeast Coast, because of these storms. And we know from climate change, we need not pretend that there's a debate. Are more intense. Storms are more intense. They're bigger. Their damage, the scale of their damage, is vastly greater because they start out with rising ocean levels. Mm-hmm. So what happens now? I look at where we sit right now, exactly for the reason you observe. I think about Eastgate for the 99 millionth time was flooded. And I look at that and I think, well, I don't think that it's right or fair that we just, you know, send everybody out of Eastgate and say you can't have development there. But we have to figure out what we're doing with the stormwater management in order to have this be sustainable, don't
right.
we?
Yeah,
and
no,
I have no idea what that solution is.
I don't either, because you're right. I mean, we look at Eastgate. Eastgate, it's happened over and over and over again.
Right.
And, you know, people forget, and the new stores come in, and, you know, Trader Joe's says it's opening, you know, it's going to open as soon as it can.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not fixing the underlying problem that...
There was some mitigation in there some years ago.
But
of course, for something of this scale, obviously it was insufficient.
It wasn't sufficient. So now what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, it's a really good point. And the same thing with the apartments right across the street here. We know that they've been flooded out a number of times, yet they still allow people to come back and live there and bring their belongings there. And we're talking about lower income people, so they're disproportionately being affected by what we are now looking at as climate change events.
Right.
And you're right. It is not going away. There
right.
is, you know, we've got to recognize this and think about, what do we do? Are we going to have to start building homes up on, you know,
right.
You know,
do we have to take Eastgate and just bring it up 10
bring
feet?
It up? I mean, what do you do? I agree. I don't think that I don't think that you don't put anything here.
Right.
You have to sort of think about a solution, and whether it's engineering, whether it's, you know, really thinking outside of the box. I don't know, but you know,
yeah.
It's devastating every time something like this happens. And
yeah, I think
you're right.
Yeah.
I think that you're not going to be able to get flood insurance. I think people that are able to afford flood insurance, okay, all good and well. What about the people that don't have flood insurance now? What about people that don't even have insurance on their apartment and their stuff? They've lost everything.
Right.
Everything.
Right.
It's
hard to get your arms around it. As an elected official, I think it's hard to get your arms around it right now in the immediate situation, because you're concerned, of course, about, you know, emergency services and dealing with the emergent situation.
Right.
But I have to say, you know, I think that there's going to be a political reckoning over this in the next 10 years in Raleigh.
Yeah.
I think that the General Assembly, for example, is just going to have to be made to make provisions in law, in regulation, in planning, in having a vision like a human being would for what you're going to do with coal ash and with a hog waste.
Right.
How many times we don't need to go through Floyd yet one more time. This
right.
is now basically twice that we've been through an event that is going to produce an environmental calamity. In this case, from this storm, I don't think we're anywhere near knowing what the impact of that's going to be from an environmental cleanup standpoint.
Right. But the General Assembly is going in the other direction, Gene.
They're
handing down policy
yes.
all the time to us that changes how we, even coding, when we're sending someone out to check the electrical wiring on a new house. The General Assembly is changing how we look at that. I mean, to make it more lenient, so the builders can get their buildings up quicker. We all want that. We all want everyone to be more efficient.
Everybody likes efficiency, right?
Yes.
Everybody loves
that.
Efficiency.
But
that's
to just
great.
Drop policy on us that ignores things like how structurally sound are these buildings, it's just a disaster. It really is.
Well, I think that one good, we're talking about, I hate to say a silver lining, because that's just really too easy. It's too Hollywood. But I do think that a benefit that can come from how the Triangle area, for example, we're talking about what happened in the last day or two, and what a surprise it was, because the storm was moving out, and all of a sudden, whammo, here's all this flooding and severe thunderstorms and talk about downbursts and high winds and terrible things. But, oh, my goodness, we were so lucky that, can you even imagine? I cannot. I have a pretty good imagination. I can't even imagine if we had gotten the storm that a week or so ago, a little more than that, that we thought we were going to be looking at. You know, when you think back to September 9th and 10th, it was looking like a Cat 4 storm was not just going to hit the coast, but was going to barrel right on up
through
Raleigh.
Yeah, it looked like we were going to
just pick up the state capitol and take it to the Virginia mountains, right?
Yep. That's exactly
and
what it looked like.
If that had happened as it was predicted, I mean, we wouldn't be talking in this radio station
probably not now,
for one thing, because I don't think anybody would have power in this area.
Right.
But holy mackerel, you have to be prepared for that to have been the scenario.
Yeah.
Or something approaching
something
it.
Like that. We were talking with emergency services, you know, all the local police departments, the sheriff's department. We were trying to prepare the best we could. We opened the shelters really early to make sure that we got people out.
Right.
But, you know, on top of this, we've all been doing double duty because of the whole protest and Silent Sam issue.
Yes.
So we've already had our police officers and our deputies and our EMTs. They've already been working overtime for the past 2-3 weeks, already exhausted, and now here comes this hurricane.
And now here's a hurricane.
Yeah.
Did you think you were getting a nap? Oh no, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Well, we're gonna take another quick break, and then we're gonna come back and talk about a little more of that. In fact, that's a great segue, because that's actually what we had planned to be talking about today, and how we're going to, you know, get things back to normal, whatever that means to you.
Wow.
And to anybody. We're talking with Penny Rich about, you know, about everything, all things Orange County. That's what we talked to Penny Rich about, because she's smart about all these things. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back with Penny Rich. We're just talking about facts. You know, facts. Remember those?
Yeah.
I don't mean the machines that spit paper out. I'm talking about F-A-C-T-S. Facts.
They went away with this past administration.
Yes. They've been outlawed.
Yeah.
I think that when you're doing, when you're making emergency plans for an organization, and I've been involved in some of that for the Housing Authority in Durham, and went to some training that was provided by HUD, and they talked a lot about the federal government's approach at that time. This was during the Obama administration. And I doubt that this has changed very much within HUD, because HUD, bless its heart, is a wonderful big bureaucracy.
Mm.
In many ways, that's a good thing. And in this area, I think it's a good thing. They take an approach toward disaster planning that is, you're not as an organization planning for disaster contingencies. You're in preparing, and when there's no disaster, you know, coming next week. And hurricanes are the ultimate example of that. Obviously, for something like a tornado that happens with practically no notice and all that, you can't do very much in advance of that, even when you know it's possible. But for events like hurricanes and the wildfires are a good example too. But when you have these very large scale disasters, train derailments and this kind of stuff, when you're planning for this stuff, your plans generally are not so much anymore oriented to how will the government solve every possible problem and how quickly can it solve it for every individual person. At this point, their emphasis, which I think is the right one, is involved in preparing communities to be resilient.
Right.
And this is such a smart way of thinking, because it benefits communities in every possible way that you can imagine and in ways that you can't imagine.
Sure.
Just a simple power outage, right? It could seem like nothing, but if you have a big senior citizen community, for example, and you have people who need air conditioning and need electricity for to power oxygen systems in hospitals, and I mean they have backup systems and all that, but in less regulated areas, they sometimes still need those things but don't have it. And how can they plan for you know, being ready to be without power, without notice for 12 hours. How can they be resilient against that kind of problem?
Right.
And you can take it right down to the building level. And you get people really involved in it. And what happens is, you know, one of the things that you get from it is, like, if you have a community, a senior community that, let's say, is a high-rise, 7-8 floors, and you have a lot of seniors, some of them in somewhat failing health and whatever, one of the most important things you have to do is make sure they're not afraid
right.
of being where they are and continuing to be there. So rumor management is one of the most important tools.
Getting back to those facts.
It's
yeah.
almost always true that these things of communication are, you know, just like in police work, in pursuit of a fleeing criminal, you know, the cops used to be pretty ready to jump on the gas pedal in the car. Until they figured out that they looked at statistics and they said, yeah, but you know, these people usually get away. There's too many incidents of high impact accidents where some innocent civilians are hurt or killed. And the fact is, the radio is the weapon of choice mm-hmm. in this pursuit of crime. You need to get it out on the radio, right. get everybody looking for this person, you know, collect what information you have from spotting the vehicle, get that on the record, and then eventually you're going to get that person. You may not get them in an hour, but you're going to get them. And this is the same thing here. I think that the more information, a more and better quality information that people have in managing emergencies, the more likely it is. That's why it just occurred to me that this thing that you were mentioning about people using Facebook Live and
yeah.
just posting short videos here's how it is in my neighborhood, here's a 30-second video.
Right. Goes back to your webcam.
Yeah,
you know.
This is just a great thing. People see it. They don't have to wonder if it's real.
Right, right. And I do think people are using social media in a better way now to mm-hmm. get information out. You know, it's interesting because we all were retweeting everybody's
right.
tweets, right? So,
right.
you know, everybody has a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand people that they're connected to.
Right.
Not all of them are the same, right? So you're continuing. It's like that old telephone chain.
Yeah,
remember
right,
when
right.
someone called and then you
yeah.
call two people and you call three people?
Right.
And now, you know, you got to remember not everybody is on social media. Not everybody is
That's true.
Able to use it. So there's got to be some sort of old-fashioned,
I'm
putting that in.
Way.
Yeah,
right.
there's
right.
got to be a low-tech way to do it also. I don't know what that is, though, when you have winds and rains and you can't get people to go to door-to-door.
Right.
You know, so we're caught in this world where we think everybody is high-tech and everybody is paying attention.
Yeah.
But we got to be careful of that, those one
group.
That's
right, but I'm going to tell you these two things. One is that makes me think of the good old PTA phone tree.
The phone tree, yeah.
Which is, you know, have somebody in your neighborhood who knows, you know, who in the neighborhood is in what status, whatever
right.
that means in terms of do they have relatives in the area? If they're elderly, you know, do they have somebody to have somebody who's designated to check on them?
Check
and
on
people
them.
Should
That's
check
right.
on each other.
Right.
The neighbor to neighbor thing is always going to be the best model.
Right.
There's no need to change it.
That's right.
Nothing
no,
desirable
that's
about
right.
changing that.
And you know, I just moved into a new neighborhood, so I don't know everyone there yet. But
right.
sure enough, everybody came around and said, "Okay, do you need anything? I'm going
right.
here. I'm going to go
right.
walk over here." Everybody just kind of, you know, did the circle and
right.
made sure that everyone was all right.
Right.
And you know,
this reminds
it works.
Me so much
it
of
works.
Winter storms.
Yeah.
When you were describing what you were experiencing in driving and then driving into it and suddenly you can't go this way anymore and you have to turn around and go back. The only time I've had an experience like that, which was quite enough for me, was in the blizzard of 1978 in Hartford. And I had
I think
to go
I was
from,
in Brooklyn then.
Yeah. I had to go. You remember that storm,
yes,
I'm
I
sure.
do.
So I had to go from where I worked at the Hartford insurance company to where my husband worked at the Travelers, which was maybe 2 miles through downtown. And this took me, I think 3 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say
And the only reason I was able to get there, and by the way, when I got there, the streets around there were completely empty. And my husband, who had been my husband for, I think, a week, my husband was just going crazy because he was like,
and you didn't
there's
have a cell
no
phone
cars
then.
Around. Yeah. Where is she?
Right.
I had no way to call him.
Right. There was
he
no
wasn't
person.
At his desk. He was at the door yeah. of the building. They closed hours before we did, and stupidly, we stayed until they told us we could go, which was, you know, this is coming down 1 inch, 2 inches an hour.
I
it was
remember.
Just outrageous. It was terrible, terrible. The reason I was able to get there is because of how my mind works, which is that I'm driving through downtown in our little Honda Civic, which fortunately had a brand new battery and a full tank of gas. And people in the road would stop in front of you. They'd get out, throw their hands in the air, walk away from the car.
Right.
And so it's the same thing as what you're describing with the flood situation of, well, you can't go this way. There's a line of traffic, and they all stopped and walked away from their cars.
Yeah.
So it's a 1973 Honda Civic is a pretty small car.
Got around.
So I drove up on the sidewalk. I drove through Bushnell Park. I just was like, give me a ticket. I dare you.
Yeah, you know, not going to happen.
I'm going to keep moving. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any choice. I'm not going to get out and spend a week in a downtown bar in Hartford hoping that, you know, I can get into the building.
I know. I think going back to you talking about emergencies, services, and how we're going to, like, look at maybe how do we do this better, or how do we, like, you know, how do we get a grip on what just happened and move forward?
Right.
Because we know it's coming.
Right.
We know it's going to come again.
It's certainty.
Not a 100-year flood.
And we knew it after Fran, too.
Right. And so what do we need to do that's better? I don't know, Gene. I mean, I was on the road. I thought I was free and clear yesterday.
Yeah, right.
When I was driving right here by Ephesus.
See, they changed the
Fordham.
Name of it because of the storm.
Efforts. It was an effort. And it just like opened up on me.
Jeez.
Right? So there were cars coming in both directions, and everybody had to stop.
And
because
I'm telling
that just
you,
flooded
I,
out.
I know this from covering Floyd because I was working for the paper in 2000, whichever year Floyd was, 99, 2000.
Yeah.
I know that from the swift water rescues that were done from that storm, and the Carborough Fire Department sent people down east to help in those rescues. And I learned a lot about swift water. And what I learned is this small amount of water, if it's moving, we'll pick up a car take it.
Well, I'll tell you.
And I know you know that.
Yeah, well, my son was just in a head-on collision. I think we talked about that. Not during this storm, but a couple of weeks back. And it was just that. He was out in the mountains, and he drives this road every day. He sees this puddle every day.
Right.
He drives through the puddle. This one day, it must have been moving because it picked up his car and threw him into traffic, oncoming traffic.
Oh, man. Is he okay?
Yeah, no, he's fine. He
needs another car now, though.
Well, we took that care of that. He cracked his sternum. I mean, it was a front head-on collision. But think about, it was, he literally said it couldn't have been more than 2 inches of water.
Right.
That
but if it's
lifted
moving,
it, a little Toyota Corolla, but lifted that. So there's your point right there.
Yeah.
It was moving. He didn't recognize it was moving because he's driven through this puddle before.
Right.
But it was moving.
There it is. Well, he was. I'm glad that turned out okay for him. You can always get another Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
All right.
2001. Well, it was my mother's, too.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, poor Jackie. Poor
Jackie didn't want to hear that.
She didn't want
Well, she's more concerned with his sternum. I know she is.
Yeah.
But still,
absolutely.
I'm sure that was a good car if she still had it around.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to take that news and take that in and take another quick break here at the weekend. Sorry about the name of the show this week. The Water Cooler. You know, we don't want to hear about water anymore for
water.
A while.
No water.
But we're going to be back in just a minute with our closing moments with Penny Rich. Oh, my goodness, Penny Rich, a wonderful county commissioner who is just doing the backstroke all week long here on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We're back with Penny Rich for our closing moments, and I was just telling Penny that I was a wonderful Girl Scout. I really was. I earned every badge.
Did you? I was a Brownie. I never made it to Girl Scouts.
Oh, man, I made it all the way through. I was a very dedicated Girl Scout. Man, I filled that sash. I had every badge. It's so funny. I earned the sewing badge. And while I was sewing on my sewing badge, this is a visual, so sorry, folks, but I'm doing this with a little needle and thread, right? And I'm taking the needle and I'm sewing it on, and I took it and kind of stabbed the kid sitting next to me.
There you go.
Oh, the things
you
remember.
Did they let you keep the badge?
They let me keep the
nice.
Badge. You know, a little sewing accident. That's probably how I got my first aid badge,
That's
too.
It.
You know, but here's the thought. It seems to me that every single person, without exception, and this goes to individuals, families, groups, classrooms, church organizations, nonprofits, absolutely everybody can get your tribe together, your little group, no matter how small. And, you know, get a little notebook and write yourself some notes about what you learned about being prepared, what you did to be prepared for this storm. And have a talk, have an expert come in if you can get one, if you can,
sure.
You know, not necessarily right now because they're pretty tied up. But in a few months, it seems to me this would be a great exercise for kids in school and for their parents to participate and use the school system as a hub for how people get together and plan for community response and resilience to be better prepared for the next time this kind of thing happens. Because let me tell you something, we're going to benefit from that every day, all the time. If kids are always going to be better prepared when they know a little more about what's going on. They don't have to have every detail, but I think that kids that understand how storms work and what we're going to be looking for and what we're going to do, they want to know. They have the same anxieties that we do. They just have less power to deal with it.
Right.
This is going to benefit us for winter storms, for hurricanes.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, on Thursday when we go back on Thursday for our meeting this week, we're not meeting tonight, obviously, because it's a holiday. But when we meet on Thursday, it's something I'm going to ask is what does it look like? What does our debriefing look like? What do we do with that information? You know, it's okay to debrief and get information, but what do we do with it next?
Right.
You know, is it
that
just
should go right into an action plan?
Right. It can't just go on the shelf.
Yeah. And everybody in the community can help with that. And, you know, like we were talking about almost a political reckoning about how we deal with this, at least in my mind. The first thing that comes to my mind is when the commissioners are looking at zoning issues and are looking at code, and these things can get a little dry for people to get really jazzed up and very motivated. But, you know, it's the nuts and bolts of these situations. These add up to better preparedness and a sturdier community overall.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that's a good point, Jean. We have the Unified Development Ordinance, the UDO, that we are constantly visiting and revisiting and amending. And let's do that again. Let's take a look and make sure that it's something that we're on top of. I think we do a pretty good job, but you know that there's always a better.
Yeah, you can always do better. You can always do more,
especially with stormwater, which is just so dangerous, and we know it's so dangerous.
Right.
But we also need to partner with the towns and make sure that their coding and their ordinances are following through also, because most of the housing that in these low-lying areas, unfortunately, are in the towns right now.
Right.
Out in the county, we have a few, but because it's a little bit more sparse and rural, you're not having the disasters that we have here.
Right.
I think we need to all join together. And when we talk about housing again, and when we talk about affordable housing, this should be on the table.
And we should. I think that as a community, that we should integrate that kind of planning, just straight up, you know, community planning for approval of new projects and so forth, and integrate that with disaster preparedness.
Right.
Because I think that when we do that, you know, I can't count the number of times that I've heard people saying, you know, what were they thinking when they approved, you know, such and such next to so and so. And, you know, it's true. And I mean if individual communities do this, right down to the most granular level, And then, you know, I know that our community does a great job of reaching out to other communities in the state that are either similar or very different to benefit from learning from each other and supporting each other in these situations. Sure. I remember this very well after Floyd, how Carrboro adopted towns down east. I just think that that's a terrific tool that North Carolina's always had.
Right.
And I think that, that works right down to the building level. If it's in your apartment building, it's the person in the apartment to your left, to your right, above and below. And it expands right out to neighborhoods and larger communities. And, you know, I know that in my experience, the most valuable tool and it's a difficult one to prepare for, is to always have communication systems with clear channels of authority and redundancy.
Yep.
And you know, the other thing about disaster planning that people don't do enough is practice.
Yes.
Practice, practice, practice.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's a boring old thing, but being ready for a hurricane is a lot like being good at the piano. Yeah. You really have to practice.
Absolutely agree. Could not agree
well,
more.
Well, you know, Penny Rich agrees with me, and so
well,
I just
have these great conversations.
We do, because we're both so smart.
and involved.
Humbled, and humble, too.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have you come back very soon, I hope, and break down some more of these political considerations as we're looking for, you know, the midterms coming up, and believe it or not, folks, in some states are going to start early voting like this coming weekend. So
yeah,
we're going to have to keep
attention.
An eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep weather eye.
Okay. Yeah, I think we are. I think we are very aware of what's going on right now politically as a group, as a community. We're working with other communities. We're trying to, you know, break the majority. There's a whole lot of things that we're working on. So I'd love to come back and, you know, just dedicate a whole hour to that.
Well, we're going to get you on the calendar before you leave today, because I'm not taking no for an answer.
All
we're
right.
doing that very
All
soon.
Right.
Our senior politics correspondent, thank you so much for joining us,
thank
Penny
you.
Rich. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Stay dry.
Oof.
Whew, whoosh.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.